Welcome to Post Status Draft, the official podcast for Post Status, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, I'm talking with Rachel Cherry. Rachel's a senior software engineer at Disney with a long background working with WordPress and the web in the higher education space. She's also the organizer of WP Campus, a conference for WordPress at higher ed institutions. Today, we dig into Rachel's story and we talk about using WordPress in the higher education landscape. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get a lot more quality news and analysis from the PostStatus Club. Check out our current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining more than 900 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Today, I'd like to feature one of our new partners, SiteGround. SiteGround offers quality hosting at all levels, whether you're just getting started or you're ready to scale for high traffic, e-commerce, and more. Check out siteground.com/poststatus for a special deal for PostStatus listeners. And thanks to SiteGround for being a PostStatus partner. Now, here's our show. All right, I'm here with Rachel Cherry. Some of you may know her better as Fama Designer, which is her handle in most places, I think. So, Rachel, hello.
Hi.
Did I get that right, that your handle is Bama Designer in most places? Most places I talk to you, that's what your handle is.
Yeah, it's pretty much Bama Designer anywhere and everywhere. And my main kind of website is BamaDesigner.com. And now that I live in California, it's kind of funny.
You get to own it a little more?
I get asked a lot, when are you going to change it? And my answer is usually, I don't think I can. I feel like that's kind of part of me now, and I don't really want to change it. So,
yeah. So there may be an abundance of y'alls and other Alabama-ish talk in this podcast, since Rachel and I both lived in Alabama. You're in California now. You're in Southern California. You're a senior software engineer for Disney. Still doing a good bit of WordPress work, though. It seems, and you've got a rich history with WordPress in-house at another organization at the University of Alabama, and you run WP Campus. So that is a higher education conference centered around WordPress. Do you want to tell people a little bit about WP Campus and kind of how that came about?
Yeah, so I've been at Disney now for about a year. But before that, I spent the last 10 years or so in higher education. And it wasn't always WordPress, but the last 5 or 6 years were. And it's pretty much how I got my start in WordPress, actually. When I got my first job at the University of Alabama, pretty much the job requirement was you have to learn WordPress. At that point, I had barely touched it. I think that I had maybe like fixed a random blog for a family member or something. And
wow. So they were using it in 2006 or so?
2011 is when I came to Alabama work. I went to school there, but then I went away and worked at a couple other universities first.
I'm with you.
So
I was about to say, that's super early adoption.
Yeah, they were on the cusp. No, they had been using it for a little while before I got there, but I'm not sure how long. So I joined a department at the University of Alabama, actually the main web office. And I pretty much was told that I was redesigning the College of Engineering website and I had to do it in WordPress. And so in about 6 months, I had to learn multi-site. I had to build out about 6 or 7 department websites that all ran on the same multi-site. I had to design and develop the theme that we used. And I built several plugins. It was quite the like being thrown into WordPress experience, but I did learn a lot. I'll give it that. So I was there at Alabama doing WordPress for about 5 years. And so now I'm trying to think of how long WP Campus has been around. Been about 2 years now. So it was about in August. This August will be 2 years. And we were, it came about from Twitter, or the idea came from Twitter. And I feel like it had obviously been brewing long before that, but inspiration actually came from Twitter was all a buzz talking about WordCamp US. And someone basically said the hashtags made it look like WordCampus. And it kind of the light bulb came on, and I thought, man, wouldn't that be great if we had a WordCamp that was focused on higher education? And I ran with it, and because I've been going to WordCamps for a while, and I enjoy it, and I always enjoy WordCamps, but you know, you kind of leave, and it's like, what did I get out of it? And I get a lot of friendships, and I get a lot of networking, and the people are amazing. And don't get me wrong, some of the sessions, you know, I get stuff out of them too. But in higher ed, there just never seem to be sessions kind of focused on what we did and how we use WordPress and things like that. So that had been kind of something brewing for a while of like, you know, of me leaving camps and just kind of not really feeling like they were made for what I do with WordPress. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what our events are focused on. And so we decided to start planning our own event. And so that was what, August 2015 is when we started. And we had our first event in July of 2016 down in Florida. And it was great. And the people that part of our community are amazing. And what's really unique, I think, about WordPress in higher ed is that it's essentially WordPress on an enterprise scale, but on a budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just saw you referencing it that way recently and definitely resonated. Not even from me working with universities, but I've done a couple sites that were involved with universities, but it sounds like kind of along the nonprofit realm as well. But
yeah, so you're building out themes and plugins and stuff that reach across, you know, this entire universities, and some are bigger than others, but your solutions, and most of the time, you know, you build something, you know, like in January, and because of the way I can talk about more in a little bit about how like the resources in higher ed are kind of low, like you build something in January and you might not have the time or resources to touch it until the next January kind of thing. And so like you have to build with the future in mind a lot, and because you just may not have the time to come back and fix these problems. And so that's something that's really interesting. But I kind of got that phrase that kind of, you know, it's in the enterprise on a budget from actually the event last year. That was like probably the most common feedback that we received, that people, they enjoyed the event because of that perspective. And that allowed for some really different conversations that you just don't hear at normal camps.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're on a budget and you're having to do so much with majority of the time so little, you come up with some pretty creative solutions. And so I think that's really kind of like the base of a lot of our community, is that it is also that everyone is wanting to help each other. Not that other people outside of higher ed are not wanting to help each other, but you know, you came to OWP campus, the conference, and people were, you know, kind of venting or talking about problems they were having. And it was never like a sense of like competition. It was more like, you know, how can I jump in and help you? Oh, I can give you some of the code that I've done and I can do this and things like that. And so there's just this really helpful spirit a lot of the time. And so it's just a really great kind of group to be a part of. I fell in love with higher ed really quickly because of that general idea that it is essentially like a community. And I would say that a lot to people, that like I have my WordPress community and I have my higher ed community, but also just kind of in general on campus, like you're part of the university, feels like a little town, and you have all of these kind of cogs working together and people working together in departments or whatever. And they're all there for the same, you know, reason. And so that applies to kind of the general grander scale of the higher ed community, is that we're all like, especially with the web, like you're not doing this for the money, you know, you're doing this for a higher purpose than that. And so some of the community and the feelings and the bringing together that brews, it's a really great group to be a part of.
Cool. And I want to talk about some of the challenges that you referenced in terms of what people focus on when they're working on higher ed websites, and also maybe talk about, I want to get into maybe what consultants could be doing better to serve higher ed institutions when those types of contracts come about. But first, let's kind of do a lay of the land of what people's organizations look like and what the differences are sometimes. Because I know just within a single university, like where you worked, it could be a lot of different departments, or you could have centralized web stuff, or, you know, and that varies, of course, across the board with different universities. So what are some of the common setups that you see? And let's approach it first from an in-house perspective. So people building their own websites. What are kind of the frequent makeups that you tend to see?
So the two kind of main setups that you see are centralized and what I guess you would just call decentralized. So Alabama was very decentralized. And what that means is that we had a main web office, like a main web communications group.
Mm-hmm.
They were basically solely responsible for like ua.edu, which is the main website, the main homepage. And they were responsible for maybe like a few smaller, I mean, not so smaller, but I guess they were technically under the, you know, I think the Office of Advancement maybe at one point. So they probably did the advancement site and they did the alumni site. So like, I guess what you would probably consider like priority one level websites. And then everyone else in the college or the university, I mean, was pretty much on their own. So I technically for the first couple years, it's hard to explain, but you could say that I worked for the College of Engineering and I was their web person. And so that college paid my salary and I worked for them. And so there were very few guidelines of what I had to do. I was encouraged to kind of stay within a certain type of branding, but it was really decentralized. There was just not a lot of like checks and balances and things like that.
There weren't like broad specifications about technology, really?
There were some. And they before I left, they tried to work on it and kind of, I think they're still trying to work on that and kind of, I guess, have more standards. They had some standards, but they were very dated. They clearly hadn't been looked at in a while. They were, I'm trying to think of a good example. I can't off the top of my head, but so there is that scenario where it's kind of like the Wild Wild West of web. And it's kind of like, if you have the money, then you might have a decent website. If you don't have the money, then there were a couple of templates that hadn't been touched in 5 years, but you could use those. A lot of people would go off campus and hire someone. A lot of people would just kind of hire a student to do it.
In a decentralized system like that, is it just someone within the department that has the authority to spend money or make a decision like that? So they're the ones kind of going outside and hiring the consultant or whatever, trying to scrap together something themselves or whatever they decide to do.
Yeah, so a lot of times you'll just have like random, if you're lucky, a college might have like a PR person. And so maybe they're finding someone to do the website. Some of the colleges don't even have that. So it's more like, or they'll have that. There was one college, I was really good friends with this person in Alabama, and she was like the alumni person. She was the PR person. She wore like five hats. And so you have people like that, and they don't have tons of experience, if any experience, with building on a website. So when they are trying to find someone, and this is not through any fault of their own, but they just don't really know what to look for. And so maybe they don't find, you know, a good resource, or maybe it's more of like a you get what you pay for scenario where they don't have a lot of money to spend, but they need something, you know. And so you have... That was a lot of the experience at Alabama. It was very spread out, and everyone just kind of took care of themselves. And we We had a lot of really great web people on campus, and we even had our own little inner community that we would meet, and we would try to help everybody out. We would try to have some resources and try to have some encouragement and help and things like that. But there was only kind of so much you could do. This is not the norm, and this is, I think, is getting better. So then you have centralized web teams, and my school before Alabama was centralized in the sense that we had one web team, and there was three of us, and we pretty much did the entire campus. So this, you'll be familiar with this, Brian. I worked at Samford.
Oh, okay. My wife went there, for people that are listening. It's not Stanford. It's Samford, S-A-M, little private school in Alabama.
Yes. Beautiful private school in Birmingham. And we had three of us, and we didn't do every single site on campus, but we did majority of them. There were some schools that had enough money and they just wanted to do their own. Like, I think the business school did their own. And I don't know what the case is now. That was years ago. But so you have that scenario. We had a CMS there. If you've ever heard of Ektron.
Ektron, I have, but I don't know why.
Well, they got bought out a couple years ago. So it's called something else now, like EpiServer or something. It's a .NET framework. It was fine. It was expensive. They made that decision right before I got there. And I think now they're actually getting off of it or trying to get off of it. I think maybe they're trying to move to WordPress. I don't know. I can't say that with confidence. So, but we were centralized. And so it was just a very different, scenario, because we were responsible for everything on campus, but we were also only three people being responsible for everything on campus.
Let's take a quick break to talk about one of our new partners that I'm super excited about, which is SiteGround. I've been a SiteGround customer for, I think, around 5 years now, and they're a really great hosting company. I have multiple websites that I host with them, including my personal blog, carlosgar.com. SiteGround has made a huge push into the WordPress community. They are part of a lot of events. They're actually sponsoring Postatus Publish as well. And they've just done a really great job at learning the needs of the WordPress community and what can work for them. They've actually got a really great deal for Postatus listeners. If you go to siteground.com/postatus, there's a 65% off deal for Postatus members for either their Startup, Grow Big, or Go Geek plans. It's a really, really great deal. And yeah, I mean, SiteGround's been doing an awesome job. They're officially recommended by WordPress.org right now, which is a really nice bonus. When you have an account with SiteGround, you get auto updates for your website so that you don't have to worry when minor updates come out for WordPress. They automatically apply those for you. They've got Nginx and HTTP 2 and PHP 7 and all those kinds of fun things. Their caching plugin works really great. And there's just all sorts of cool stuff. WP CLI and SSH are built right in, even on those shared plans. So check it out. SiteGround's a really good, like, all-in-one host that could be the right host for your next project. So go to siteground.com/poststatus to learn more about that. And thank you to SiteGround for being our newest partner on Poststatus. In a centralized system, how do you deal with, you know, people lining up and saying, hey, we need a whole new website, or someone else saying, hey, we need X, Y, or Z, or we need access, or, you know, like, to change this or things like that. Did y'all have a project management system or something that people could use, or do most universities just kind of people call, and a little more old school than that? What's common amongst centralized systems?
I think the centralized systems that have it figured out know what they're doing. They have governance, and they have a plan, and they have rules. And so generally, if you have a centralized system and you're covering a lot of ground, your best bet is to have templates. You know, so multi-site is actually really big in higher ed.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that from a technology perspective.
We could talk about that in a second. But so you'll have a lot of cases where basically, a lot of multi-site is used for, like, blogs and stuff. So, but it's a really great framework for something like this, where you have a preset themes and you have pre-selected plugins, and you have a very organized kind of way of handling requests, and you have priority levels and you have things like that, and you kind of work within your means. And but if you've built it outright, it's flexible and it's scalable, and that doesn't mean it doesn't come with challenges, but it's doable. And so I think the schools, I think the schools that kind of have all that figured out, they do a really good job of governance and defined boundaries and rules and things like that. And then they know how to build a scalable library that people can pick and choose what they need versus what they want. And also kind of defining that line. Cause I mean, as we all know, you don't have to be in WordPress to know that a lot of times people, you know, want elements on the website that they don't need. And so in higher ed, there's a lot of that still. And so there's a lot of having to draw the line of, well, you know, if you're going to come to us and we're going to give you services, then you have to kind of work within our means and you have to work within what we have. And so I think that's really the best way to handle it. Governance is a big deal in higher ed. And so it's really great when people can have that set up and they can kind of define everything. And I think that really helps with the centralized web.
Which are both scenarios common for people bringing in outside consultants? I kind of imagine it would be.
Yeah, because obviously I feel like the decentralized, you probably have more people going outside.
But with less maybe oversight and understand, like you probably wouldn't, it'd be harder to put together a good spec, I assume, or like a RFP process would be more difficult if you're decentralized, if you don't have someone giving you guidance on like what to ask for in particular. It seems like it might be a challenge there versus centralized. If it's a web team that's putting something like that together, maybe that might be a little more straightforward. Is that something that you think would be true, or?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like a lot of the, there's definitely some frustration in decentralized when you, kind of like I mentioned earlier, you have people that need a web service and they don't really know exactly what they're asking for, and they don't really know anything about the web, and that's not really their job, but now it's their job. And so you'll have lots of problems where someone will go outside and they also maybe don't know if there are internal standards and guidelines, they are not familiar with them. So they don't know to cover that or make sure the outside group covers it. And so then this outside group comes in, builds this big website, and then, you know, the branding police come and they're like, hold up. And you know, like, and so you have we actually had a lot of those, you know, happen in Alabama, and where all intentions, you know, were well and all good and all, but at the end of the day, this, you know, this website needs the right logo and it needs, you know, this and things like that. And so I think that definitely happens more with decentralized, just because of, you know, the power of the beast of what it is. And you have, especially when you have a university as large as Alabama, it's pretty, I mean, it's not the biggest university, but it now is up to like 40,000 students. Mm-hmm. And so that's a lot of, it requires a lot of manpower to, you know, set up all this stuff. And so the bigger it is, the more problems that come with that.
And in terms of stakeholders, you have the college. So we'll stick with engineering. So you have a college of engineering, but then there's departments within that. So mechanical engineering or industrial engineering or whatever. And then you also have, I guess, the administrators within the college, the administrators at the university, the broader university level, administrators within the department. And then you have like more individual stakeholders, like professors and staff that want to get content on the website, or even students that want to have some form of presence on the web. So like, how do you balance that kind of stuff? And at what point, I guess, does like the really low level stuff start to matter? Like, or is that what matters most from the very beginning? Like giving something like giving students a presence, or is that kind of a, do you view that kind of thing as a whole different world of like student blogs and stuff?
So you hit the nail on the head there. So when I was working on the engineering site, you know, it's not just a matter of making the dean happy. It's, you've got all these professors that have a stake, and somewhere along the line, there has to be like a line drawn of like what's important and what's constructive for the whole college versus, you know, small things that are, you know, that are only important to one person and then aren't part of the whole, the bigger mission of the website. And so there's, because in the reality at the end of the day is that, so just kind of using me as an example, I was the only person. I was the only web person. I was the designer. I was the developer. I was QA. I was the project manager. You know, I did everything.
For the College of Engineering.
For the College of Engineering, which is one of the bigger colleges.
Yeah.
And has 7 or 8 departments. I think they added one right before I left. And so they're also just kind of have to be realistic with time. There's only so many hours that, you know, that I'm getting paid to work a day. And so you have to prioritize, and then you have to have someone, sometimes, you know, you have to have someone like, for example, let's just say the dean, who, you know, who has your back, who will, you know, if you have a professor or something, and I'm just really theorizing.
Right.
But, who, you know, if you need them to come in and say, hey, dude, like, or woman or whoever, like, this is not, I get it. I get it. It's important to you. But unless you want to go out and hire another web person, this is not going to happen right now. We'll put on the list, you know, or whatever. And so there are very you can't paint all of higher ed with too broad a brush, but usually it's very limited resources. And so there's kind of, I touched on earlier, you pretty much have to have a lot of templates and a lot of reusable assets. And so it's kind of, you kind of start from like the top down where you get the really big stuff that like everyone needs. And then you kind of work your way down a peg or two. And this is something that 5 out of the 7 departments need. So I'm going to make that next. And then if you have time left over at the end of the 40-hour week, then, you know, maybe I can get to this, you know, thing that this one person wants. And, but you may get there, you may not. And so there's lots of that. There's lots of saying no. And sometimes I was better at saying no than other times. And sometimes I'd get in over my head. And then sometimes I just want to give everyone everything and it would all blow up. But I kind of forget what your question was. I went down a tangent.
Just kind of talking about the stakeholders, and I think you hit on most of those. One of my remaining questions on that, and I think I know the answer, but once you get down to like student websites and student blogs and things like that, is that just a whole different universe?
Yeah, usually. So some people, I think usually the case is that there's usually like a student organization group on campus. That was the case at Alabama. Like, we had a student org group that kind of handled student blogs. So we didn't deal with that, but that was just us. So that's a whole other thing. Cause anyone can imagine that trying to like organize student blogs and keeping them up to date and keeping them like when the students graduate, what happens and like who has ownership of this and stuff like that. It's very complicated and there's rules. I mean, you know, you're working with minors sometimes, and like, it's a whole other beast that I've never had to deal with, but I imagine like from a tech side, it would be very similar to like a faculty blog environment, which is probably one of the most common uses of multi-sites, is that they'll have, you know, what's pretty much considered like a domain of one's own. And you basically set up a multi-site and you have like your preset themes and everything. And then faculty members can get on and have a blog, and they can pick and choose from predetermined plugins. And it's things like that. I always really appreciated Washington State University, where Jeremy Felt works. He does a really great job of publishing all their code.
Took it off the tip of my tongue.
They do a really great job of they manage something like this, and they put all of their code on GitHub. And then they also release their preferred list of third-party plugins, like what they allow on their multi-site network. And so it's a great resource to go, and if you like, if you're kind of new to the game, or maybe you're not necessarily a dev who can test plugins for security's sake or whatever, these other, you know, there are a lot of, Jeremy included, and others that kind of release these lists and they'll help us out, things like that. And so,
yeah, so let's dig into multi-site a little bit. So Jeremy's the component maintainer within WordPress for multi-site, and he has a big say, I guess, in terms of the direction of multi-site in terms of WordPress core development. But also he uses multi-site and WordPress for managing kind of everything at the Washington State side of things. He seems to be doing all sorts of stuff all the time. And it seems to me like every time I hear about multi-site universities, this is where networks and networks starts to come up. These like layered networks. And I guess let's just start with, you've already kind of laid out a pretty clear description of why multi-site can be valuable, because you've got departments and colleges and whatnot. What I'm really curious of is how do you share things? How do you teach people to use things? Like, how do you onboard? Like, I'm just curious of how the whole concept happens in terms of bringing people into the site and trying to get them involved so that they're not like banging your door every day trying to get you to do things for them.
So I've actually, I'll try to lay out, I guess, what I would do, because I know that even before I left Alabama, we kind of tried to change the way a lot of this was handled, and then I left. But I think kind of what I mentioned before, as far as like, how do you onboard people? How do you make sure they're not just constantly bugging you with emails and things like that? A lot of it, I think, is communication and education. So if we're imagining that all the tech is set up and we have like five themes you can pick from, and we have our preset list of plugins, and we have all that prepared. So then what should happen is, you would have kind of like an onboarding application or something. You know, someone comes and they say, this is what I want, and this is what I need, and this is what I want to use it for, and you talk with them for a minute. And then what should come next is lots and lots of education. And what I think would be really great is if you had like recurring kind of open door sessions, in a sense. And so maybe just once a month, or maybe twice a month, you have, okay, for, you know, we're going to have an hour, and you can come in this computer lab and you can ask us anything you want, and we'll walk through stuff or whatever. And then you have like written tutorials online, things like that, like how to do this, how to do this, how to do this. And so basically you're kind of preempting all the emails, one would hope. I mean, you're still going to get some, but at least then majority of the time you can say, well, here's our documentation. And then, you know, if you have any more questions, you can come to our open door every Friday or something. Like, you kind of have to have a plan. You kind of have to have some organization. You have to put the initial investment into these documentations and these meetings, things like that. And so that way you can kind of have your time back the rest of the week. So that's kind of how I would do it. I feel like it's different for everybody and things like that. But you pretty much kind of what I've touched on, you have to have a plan, and you have to have some, it's like organized chaos, so to speak, because otherwise it just can get really out of hand, because like as you've touched on, otherwise people will just, there's a lot of people that you're essentially taking care of. And if you're centralized or decentralized, you're probably have limited, you know, resources and time. And so the more you can kind of organize it all up front, the easier it will roll out. And so then you have a whole tech side of it, of probably some of the best examples are like what Jeremy does, where you're very organized and in your code. Hopefully you have code reviews. Hopefully you have some, you know, smart people, you know, building scalable products and things like that. And you're doing a lot of thinking about the bigger picture. You're writing code in a way that is extendable, and you're not under engineering your code or things like that. And it's a, as I say this all out loud, it's a lot to balance. And mm-hmm. a lot of times you really have like maybe three or four people if you're lucky.
It feels like it really could be similar to working in house in any big organization, but like you said, on a budget.
You're pretty much a lot of times in, especially in my experience, like this is not, you know, my experience is not everyone's experience, but a lot of time the budget was pretty much just my salary. And so,
right.
You know,
or a certain portion of your year.
Yeah. You kind of have to get, you have to get creative with what you're building and how you're doing it, because otherwise, like there, you just kind of, you won't make it if you don't think outside a little bit. And especially, I mean, and like I mentioned earlier, like I was everything, you know, I wasn't just a developer, and I was a designer. So I was having to think from a scalable design standpoint, something that my design has to be used by, you know, the main college website and all 8 departments.
Do you think that things would be better if there was more money invested? Like, is there a, I know they're big, I mean, budgets are huge, huge deals at a university, but like, is that something that's common for it to be on a budget, but like should be able, that like there should be more money that could go towards these types of things? Or do you think it's an appropriate investment that's happening at most universities?
The feeling I get from most places is, and definitely from my experience, is that it was not an appropriate investment. Like the website was just not a high priority. And maybe hopefully that's changing, you know, like you would hope as in this day and age. It's like, really? You don't think the website, like that's pretty much,
it's your first interaction.
Yeah, it's the first place people go. And I mean, definitely, I think over the last like few years when I was still at Alabama, that viewpoint was slightly changing. But the problem that usually comes along with like trying to convince, you know, the people with the money that you need more money is that you've worked without the money for so long. And they're like, oh, well, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. And like, and so you're like, no, wait, like I need help. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to convince someone who is not a tech person, you know, that you need the money to help you. The help. And when all they see is that you've been doing without it and you've been doing fine, but really you've been like going crazy and, you know, working your butt off. And so, I definitely would say that it's underinvested. And from what I've seen, and this is not all universities, some actually, you know, some see it for what it is and they invest and they have, you know, decent teams and resources and things like that. So I would hope that over time that it will change, and you know, only time will tell.
One of the things that I feel like would just be a massive potential roadblock in doing a university project would be dealing with stakeholders on design types of things for a really long time or percentage of the planned project, when I'm guessing a lot of the work that really needs to happen is in the flow and all the stuff in the usability side of the website to try to make it a better experience once it's actually live. Is that something that you experienced or you hear of happening a lot, where people use up their time and budgets on the less consequential things? And how do you get around that?
Yeah, there's definitely, I've experienced problems where there's, you know, I mean, you know, when I started in the web, there was pretty much like one title. You were webmaster, you know, and you were full stack and you just did everything. And thankfully that seems to be changing, where you have your back end and you have your front end and you have your UX designer and, you know, all this. And so there's definitely a struggle that I experienced when I was in higher ed, where even, you know, like I mentioned several times now that I was the full stack and I was everything. And so it's like, you have that problem where there's only so many, like, you can't really cover it all. You can't be an expert in it all. And you can't, like, and so you need someone else to come in and say, you know, I've just spent the last, you know, like 3 months staring at this design and I think it's great, but what do you, you know, you need someone else to come in and help you break out of this, this mode you've been in. But so like when it comes to like usability and, you know, it'd be really great to like have a usability person that comes along. A lot of the higher ed conferences that I go to, like information architecture is usually a pretty common topic where they talk about it because you'll have these like higher ed websites with just, you know, massive navigation.
Yeah. The mega menu is just born for universities.
I mean, you're trying to cover all these academic departments and you're trying to cover all these student things and you're trying to cover athletics and you're like, and so that alone is a whole thing. And then, you know, accessibility is a whole other thing. And because accessibility, you know, should probably be the most important thing at the end of the day. That and accessibility and usability, you know, should be like the top two pretty much, because without that, it's, you know, what's the point? And so, but I, you know, like I would hope that a lot of universities, you know, would have people just dedicated to that. At Alabama, we had an accessibility, you know, person who right before I left, went through all the work of doing RFPs to pull in accessibility testing tools. And I'm pretty sure they have it all set up now and it's great. And so it's just, those should be priorities. That's where, you know, some of the money, some of the budget should go, is making sure that you have these tools ingrained in all the website workflows and everything. And that it's constantly, you know, scanning and, you know, creating easy reports to go to the web devs to fix stuff. And so
are those priorities that are easy to get across to the stakeholders? Or
I feel like accessibility is definitely one of the, you imagine it's one of the more easy things to kind of come across because there's lots of legal implications with it.
Yeah. That type of institution for sure.
Yeah. I am friends with the accessibility person at UA and she always gave this great talk and it was called about accessibility and it was basically called like carrots versus sticks. And it was essentially like, you know, you would hope that the carrot would be enough to kind of get people to be accessible. But if not, then you could beat them with like the stick. And I mean, it's funny, but it's sad and it's true. And, but yeah, the accessibility at least comes with legal requirements. You can, and people do get sued all the time. And so you hope it doesn't come to that, but it can. And that kind of pushes the money for that further along. Mm-hmm. Usability. I mean, there's not really too, I mean, you could tie that into accessibility a little bit, but for the most part, it's a little harder. Like we would talk sometimes about like, how can you, you know, maybe take advantage of some students and have like usability labs and things like that. And you wouldn't see a lot of priority placed on like usability testing. And I know some places do. I think at last year's conference, we had a case study on it about how they assembled some usability testing and used that data to drive, you know, change on the site. And it's really great when you can see that happening because you can take advantage of, you have a lot of people around. And so if you can do it right and you can, but it you don't have to necessarily, you don't necessarily have to spend too much money. But it does take time. I mean, it's, maybe you're not spending money, but you are investing the time it takes to organize it, things like that. And so I do think, once you can see it in action, it's much easier to sell and it's much easier to see how much it helps. But a lot of people just kind of look at it and see it as time that they could, you know, spend doing something else. So it's just another thing on the list to check off on the workflow once you've designed and you've developed and you've done content. And because another problem that I experienced a lot in higher ed was just simply like keeping content up to date. Mm-hmm. And because you don't really have, a lot of times you won't see just people who their job is to do web content. You might see a couple, but we I had like a PR person who wrote most of our content, but I had to train this person on like how to write content for the web, which is very different from writing it for print and press releases.
Right.
So, you know, there's that aspect too that goes in, and, you know, and so it's a lot to juggle.
What do you think the community could do to improve the experience for higher ed institutions? And when I say community, I mean mostly in terms of like core development and then let's say like big plugin makers, like big established plugin makers.
So I, something that comes to mind, there are a lot of like very kind of specific use cases of WordPress in higher ed. There's definitely certain elements that are used a lot. For example, calendars are huge, like showing all the campus events, and something that always, and there are definitely like calendar plugins, and, you know, I use the events calendar, the Modern Tribe one, a lot. It's a great plugin. But some of my biggest piece of feedback that I would always give, it's like, if you really want higher ed to use, you know, to like use your calendar, then what the thing that was always usually missing was the ability to share calendars across websites. And I would kind of hope that now with the API that, you know, that's going to change, and it may have changed. I mean, I haven't had to use it in a few months. So someone please, you know, call me out on Twitter or something. Tell me that this has been solved.
If not, I'm sure Modern Tribe would love to hear that, because I know they get a lot of university client work in part because of the calendar.
Oh yeah. They do. And they're really active in our group, and they may even be working on this. This may pop out in like a month, or maybe it already did, but like, but my examples, I'm so sorry, Shane. But my example is like the ability to say, like, you have your main calendar on your main website and it has all the events. So like, for example, at Alabama, UA.edu, it would have, if it was a WordPress, you know, system, it would have all the events, and maybe it used like a taxonomy or something to assign a department or something like that. And so then essentially on the department level, they would pull down their events and show them on a department level, and at the same time still have them on the main site, and then but not have to like update in two places.
Yeah, it seems like maybe just content sharing across the board, the calendars being a very, very prolific example, I'm sure, but content sharing across networks would be really valuable.
Yeah, we were really trying to... So content not being updated and just being forgotten is a big problem. And so before I left, I was trying to do a lot of like, well, we can use the API and we can just pretty much just copy, or just, you know, show content from a main source. And that way it's always updated, because basically not content, not being updated, and then content like being copied and pasted and then not updated, was a big problem. And you could get into like legal issues with it, because if the information was
saying something incorrect.
Yeah. And, you know, this is like a random example, but it's like, what if you had something on your site, you know, like a deadline or something, or you had like course curriculum type information and that you copied and pasted from, you know, because I know that they, at least at Alabama, they went to great lengths to have like course curriculum, because that's like the most important information. If you get that wrong, it's horrible. Like someone can't graduate or something. They did a pretty good job. They had their own system for that. But the problem would be that people would copy and paste that information and put it on their website. And then, you know, obviously it wasn't like going to be updated or anything. And so it'd be forgotten about. And then some student would read it, and then there'd just be this whole mess of trouble. So content sharing in general is a really big need. We have a lot of digital signage now at universities, and it's kind of becoming more common in general, but it's really big at campuses because of like emergency communications and like just promoting events as like people walk around between buildings. And
you see like a big sign flashing a banner or something.
Yeah. On just, they just pop up TVs, and at Alabama, whatever system it was when I was there, when I had to like work on digital signage, it was horrible. But it was like software based, but it wasn't necessarily like you could pop up in your browser. And but like, I don't think a digital, I think, I know there are some universities that have digital signage built in WordPress, and some of it's on GitHub, but there's not like an official, like I,
that sounds like a great product idea.
I know, right? That'd be a great, someone could probably do really good if they came up with a really good digital signage system. And, or just like general, like like messaging system or something that people could use. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't think there's a, I don't think there's an official like product out there for digital signage.
That's got my wheels spinning for sure.
So I'm trying to think of some other really good.
Are universities opposed to spending money on plugins, or is it even, or is it preferred sometimes, or what's the thought in terms of commercial versus free and open source?
I think, I mean, pretty much whatever money I could get my hands on, I would spend on plugins.
Money that's in addition to salary.
Yeah. Like I didn't really have like a full blown budget. Like I'd pretty much be like, if I needed something, I would go ask for it. And maybe like, I mean, I kind of had a pot to pull from, but like whatever the money, the only money that I spent was either on a travel to like go to a conference, which I pretty much could go to like one a year. And, mm-hmm. And then I spent my money on code because, you know, I recognize that I don't want to, you know, I could just spend this money instead of spending all my time that it would take to, you know, build this product and maintain it. And I know this is a good tool, so I'm going to use it. Whether it was, you know, like half of it was WordPress and then half of it was, you know, just other software, systems. I needed like services that could help me do my job. So, we spent the money on the events calendar plugin, and we spent money on, there's a really great tool that's not WordPress called Site Improve that scans your website and does like spell checks and quality assurance and accessibility and stuff like that. And, you know, also I needed that because I didn't have time to sit down and, you know, scan our, like, I was responsible for like 60 websites.
Yeah.
And so, that's, you know, I didn't crazy. Have, that was, you know, I didn't have time to like scan everything and make sure, you know, that the quality was good. And, you know, and so service, basically any kind of service that can help people in higher ed just help their job be easier, you know, like anything that can help with like project management or content management, something that, you know, something, another common, not necessarily a problem, but thing in higher ed is just that you have tons and tons of content editors. Like, you know, even if it's like on your multi-site network, you know, like you have a lot of times you'll build a site and kind of hand it off. And then you only really hear about the site if there's a problem. And, but you have tons of people logging in and writing content and updating things, or maybe not updating things. There are some plugins that kind of help with this. I think it's like the, I could be wrong. I think it's like the Edit Flow plugin that, you know, it has like a, it has this little tiny feature that's so great. Basically, like you can set an expiration date on the content. And then if the content hasn't been touched, so let's say in 6 months, you get an email.
It just, oh, wow.
And so that way you can go to it and you can be like, you can kind of put some eyes on it. Make sure nothing's too crazy out of date, you know, and make sure it's updated if necessary, you know, or it's fine. You leave it alone and you reset the expiration and you're fine. But if it wasn't for that email, it's like, I'm thinking about the 59 other websites. And so I may not, you know, be concerned about this one page. And so, and then honestly, the person that's responsible for that website, it's not really their job. It's like, it's a as needed. No, what's that phrase? I can't think of it, but you know, it's an as needed job where it's like, they're really like the department secretary, but because there's no one else that can or wants to do the job of managing the content on the website, it's now their job. And so they're not really thinking about it. And, you know, and it's not, like I said, it's not their job. It's not really, you know, what they do, and they don't. So sometimes you need to have those kind of tools that will go in and make sure that everything is hunky-dory kind of thing. So I do think that a lot of universities and a lot of web teams, they do spend money on plugins. And And there are a lot of unique, you know, kind of uses of it. And the REST API, I think, will be big for content sharing. So, you know, anything that can kind of help with that. And anything that can help with accessibility.
What do you think is currently setting, helps set WordPress apart? What do you think makes universities choose WordPress today compared to other things, whether they're commercial or they're also open source?
So obviously free is big. It's hard to beat free. But
yeah,
there's definitely been a stigma about the free comes at a cost sometimes, because a lot of people, from my experience and from what I've seen and heard in higher ed, and this is not just really a higher ed once I say it all out loud, but you see this thing and you think that free means easy. And, you know, WordPress was kind of touted that way for a while, that, oh, this is 5-minute install, it's so easy. And it's like, well, no, at the end of the day, you still need someone that's going to manage it. Like, you still need someone that knows what they're doing. You can't just throw this up and, you know, put the secretary in charge of it and then, like, want the world out of it. And so I think that kind of went on for a while in a lot of scenarios and in higher ed. And then problems popped up, like security issues. And WordPress definitely got a stigma in higher ed that still kind of persists about security, because a lot of what happens, especially in larger institutions, and it happened at Alabama, where people would throw up, like a professor or something would throw up a website, like a single install type ordeal, and then forget it. And then realize how much work goes into it, how much work it goes into, like, yeah, updating a website and things like that.
So they have the authority to make the website, but then they don't have anyone on them to keep it up to date. And
yeah. So 2-3 years pass and the site gets hacked because no one's touching it. No one's updating WordPress, like updating core and things like that. And so that's definitely been, so then you have your IT people just frustrated and they don't want to, like your OIT administrator type people getting frustrated and they don't want to use WordPress anymore. And then you find yourself like having to defend, you know, that stuff. And so free comes, you know, with some cons because there's definitely, like with most things, when there's money involved, there's this like feeling of, oh, well, it must be really nice. If you're paying for, you know, something, that it must be better. And so you have a lot of people that would rather just kind of throw money at a CMS, a proprietary CMS, and go for it that way. So when you're kind of like trying to argue the case for, you know, WordPress, there's lots of other pros. And so I think another one of the reasons that a lot of universities go with it is the open source, that, and the fact that all the, you know, the information is open and available, and the community, you know, that it's the fact that the core code base is always being updated, and the fact that there's just all of this code out there that people could take advantage of and build upon, and the fact that, you know, there's a big community built around it, you know, whether it's the camps or the meetups or whatever. There's a lot of that. I think that goes a long way in higher ed, and because it kind of aligns with a lot of like higher ed values of like education and development, things like that, that you don't get from a proprietary system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's another one of the big reasons why WordPress goes a long way.
For someone looking for a lot of experience and kind of diving in headfirst, do you think working at a university would be a good idea? And follow up to that would be, are jobs readily available at universities for stuff like this?
I would say yes and yes.
Okay.
It's a great, it's a great entry level environment. Not everyone, you know, obviously is entry level, but because of like kind of what we touched on earlier with lower budgets for the web and things like that, you'll get, you know, your salary is not going to be that high. And so a lot of times you do get a lot of entry level people. And it's a great environment because it's more relaxed per se than like someone who's going to go do entry level at Disney or whatever. And, you know, yeah. And so that doesn't mean that there's not tons of work, as we've already mentioned. I mean, you're going to get so much work, but with that work becomes like so much experience. Like you're kind of getting like fast paced experience and you're getting the entry level of like what it'd be like to work in a big company, like a Disney or whatever. I'm just throwing that out there, but you get the experience of kind of the crazy and all the things that could go wrong and all the things that, you know, could happen, but with a little bit, you know, much less risk per se. Hmm. And so I would highly recommend, like, if you're kind of wanting to get into web and if you're wanting to get into like WordPress, like finding a university that uses it. And it's a great environment to learn on and to test things out. You get lots of like random requests and things. And so I can't even tell you how many custom plugins I made because of all the, you know, kind of the random wants and needs. And so I really got to flex my code skills, so to speak. And also, like, if you can, a lot of universities, the benefits are amazing. And so, I mean, I was spoiled when it came to like insurance and things like that. And so the time off, and you get a lot of time off, and it's a really great, I mean, that from that aspect, I would totally recommend it too. You know, go in and check it out for like a few years and get your feet wet and then maybe, you know, if you want to move on. But a lot of people are kind of like high ed web for life. Like, it's just this, I felt Alabama was my third university. I fell in love like within a couple months after my first university. I wasn't even doing the web there. I was doing graphic design. And I worked at this really small school in Columbus, Mississippi, called Mississippi University for Women.
I've heard of it.
It's a great school. I know they've been wanting to change the name for a long time because men actually go to school there, but
that's why I've heard of it. Cause I thought it was funny. Cause do they have sports?
They just started like a year ago trying to get sports again.
Okay.
I think they stopped doing sports in like the early 90s and then just stayed off of it for a while. They hired like an athletic director a year or two ago and they've been trying to build it back up. I think they're called like the Blue Line and their mascot is an owl.
Yeah. I remember a joke, I think, from like high school or something where someone was talking about how someone was going to play football there, which was probably not true, but funny.
Yeah, I think one of their taglines is like serving, also educating men since 1981 or something like that. It's
nice.
It's a really pretty school and it's pretty old. I think it's almost as old as Alabama, which was founded in 1831.
Yeah, it says 1884.
Oh yeah, okay, not quite as I was gonna guess, closer to 31, but it's a neat school. So I got kind of my feet wet there, and you just fall in love with the environment. And then I went to Samford for a couple years, and then went to Alabama. So I would definitely recommend higher ed space for any, especially anyone getting started. And then I would say that there are jobs it's more like thinking a little deeper, but I mean, like, because of the, you know, lower salary, there can be turnover, you know, a lot from people getting their feet wet and mm-hmm. then wanting to move on. So there's definitely jobs, and I would love to kind of set up some kind of job board or something so that we can kind of have it more centralized for us at least, but we do try to share them. We have a jobs channel on the Slack and I try to tweet them out whenever I see them. So if anybody knows of one, they want me to share it, please do let me know. But,
or you can put it on the Postas job board.
Oh yeah.
Obviously.
I mean, that goes without saying.
Well, cool. So the second in-person version of WP Campus is coming up. We actually almost had a schedule conflict between WP Campus and Publish, but WP Campus is going to be July 14th and 15th. And this time y'all are doing it in Buffalo, New York. Is it going to be on campus?
It is. It's going to be on the campus of Canisius College.
Cool. So folks that are highly interested in higher ed and WordPress, or maybe you're already in it, then obviously this could be a fun event for you. I've heard rave reviews of both events that y'all have had so far, so I'm sure that this will be a lot of fun. Is it different for you now being out of higher ed and running a higher ed conference?
It comes with its challenges. I do miss being in higher ed. Don't get me wrong. It's Disney. I'm in heaven, but
yeah, you're a Disney fan.
I'm a big Disney nerd, and it's a lot of fun, the stuff I get to do at Disney, but I do miss higher ed. Maybe I'll come back one day. It makes it a little bit harder to plan, things like that. It's a challenge, but it's a challenge that I feel is worthwhile and that I love. And I love my involvement, and I love what we get to do. And the events are a lot of fun. So we had the in-person one last year, and then we had the online one earlier this year that went pretty well. We're going to try to have another one in the fall. So we'll probably announce that after the in-person and kind of get that ball rolling. But it's different, but it's still amazing.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you talking to me for this episode of the podcast. And where do you want to send folks in terms of catching up with you personally, talk about web stuff, whatever?
So BamaDesigner.com is kind of my main stay right now. It's just kind of a landing page. I kind of hope to get some kind of blog up and running later this year, but you can kind of find all my links there. So you can find my Facebook, and you can find my LinkedIn, and you can find my GitHub and all that stuff there. And then Twitter, Bama Designer. I'm pretty much Bama Designer in most places. But I am speaking next month at WordCamp Orange County. If you're in the Southern California area, I'm going to talk about accessibility, which is a big passion of mine. And so, yeah, but my main place, if you want to reach out and chit chat, is on Twitter. And then wpcampus.org is our main website, and you can go there to get involved. And there's a get involved button. And basically, if you fill out the form, you'll get an invite to our Slack, where you can hop in there and join in on the conversation. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining me. And if y'all want to catch PostStatus, go to poststatus.com. Go to poststatus.com/jobs to find a job or list your job. And you can join the PostStatus Club at poststatus.com/club. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, Brian.